In a world where technology is evolving faster than ever, how are leaders supposed to keep up? As AI continues to transform the world, leaders need more than just a technical know-how these days. They need the right mindset in order to be able to thrive in a rapidly changing environment. If you're struggling with integrating AI throughout your organization, or you're navigating a digital transformation, or you're looking to foster a culture of continuous learning, this episode is just for you. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who understand that being a great leader in today's day and age requires constant learning, growing, and adapting. Because great leaders aren't born or made, they're always in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby. I'm the two-time best-selling author and CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million individuals in the past 3 decades. I'm super excited about today's guest. His name is Tariq Munir, and he's based out in Australia. He's a LinkedIn top voice with 20 plus years of experience spanning finance, integrated planning, and digital finance transformation. He regularly delivers lectures and keynotes on digital transformation at top universities throughout Australia and the world and major local and international conferences. Tariq has worked with many global organizations, and he brings an expertise in leading complex and large-scale digital transformations. In our conversation today, Tariq and I discuss the importance of developing a digital mindset, the role of emotional intelligence in leading digital and remote teams effectively, how to balance data-driven decision-making with human intuition. And one of the things that I love most about this conversation is Tariq shares some real-world examples of successful digital transformation initiatives. So without further ado, let's jump into this great conversation with Tariq. What are the top core skills that individuals are going to need in the future?
Yes. First of all, let's first understand it. Why, right? What AI is doing, right? So today, AI is reshaping how we are working, how we are interacting, and very importantly, how we are creating as a human, because that was something which was considered a very specifically human domain. In an organizational setting today, AI is now becoming our coworker. So AI or technology, whatever you may call it, right? I'll be using those words interchangeably, because today when you talk about technology, people listen AI, people hear AI. So, Yuval Noah Harari argues in one of his books that Homo Deus, that humans, at its very simplest form, at the end of the day, are an algorithm as well, right? Yes, an organic one, a complex one, but still we are an algorithm, right? And we are, our recipe or our code is within our DNA, our genetic code. Now, similarly, AI is an algorithm. Or all these machines we are talking about today, all the technologies, is an algorithm. Yes, a non-organic one or a synthetic one, but an algorithm, right? So similar to how our human workers have needs and they need to be managed, this non-organic co-worker or the collaborator needs to be managed as well, right? So that requires a very different skill set in understanding what are the needs of these non-organic beings, these synthetic beings, this artificial intelligence or synthetic intelligence, whatever we may call it. How do we coexist with them in a workspace, right? In a working environment. So for example, some of the needs of these non-organic beings or artificial intelligence is around continuous updating, right? They need data. They strive on data. They thrive on data, right? So they need data. They need constant updation. They need a very complex integration with your current and existing processes, right? So how do you actually manage all of that? So that requires a very different skill set today. Similarly, if we expand and zoom out a little bit at an organizational level also, organizations are no longer just input, processing, manufacturing of products or services, and then an output, and you are creating it for your customers. It has become a very complex interaction or an interplay of humans, physical machines, if you are manufacturing your processes, this artificial or synthetically intelligent beings, and digital networks which connect all of this together. And then this interplay creates an output, interpreting that output. So all of that is now at a position, brings us to a point where leaders need a very specific skill set that they need to build on. Now, I know it was a bit philosophical, right? But I think it's important to understand that how do we coexist with these artificially intelligent systems, right? So now let me make it a little easier for you and the audience, maybe. Is around, I will talk about five skill sets, right? Which based on my research and my experience or observations as well, that I believe are important today for leaders to develop. First of all is digital mindset, understanding how you bring all of these complex interplay of machine algorithms and digital networks together. Secondly, and we can dig down into it as we go along. Of course, we will have our conversation around mostly around these. Secondly, we need to have a very specific data-driven mindset. So leaders need to build what is data telling them. Leads to build a mindset of relying on data as opposed to just relying on their gut feel. I know this might be a big ask, but because we all, as a human, we all want to rely on our intuition as a natural way of how we make decisions. But we need to make our decisions based on data. Thirdly, and for me, it's very important, which I believe is one of the most important one, is around being emotionally intelligent. Understanding what are the needs of your teams, what are the human needs, that's an important aspect. Fourth is being able to understand and develop a skill set around what are the ethical and responsible requirements of AI, right? This is not, the world we are in now is not just consisting of softwares. We are in a world where softwares can theoretically think and act. Right? So we need to understand how that will impact the society at large, that is going to impact our teams, that is going to create a bias, things like that. So understanding of ethical requirements and building that risk mindset is another critical skill set needed in the future. And last but not the least, and I cannot stress that one enough, is around building a continuous learning mindset, right? We cannot stop learning. We are in a phase. We have gone past that industrial revolution which was basically based on a specific group of people given a specific task on the production floor, and they would do that for the rest of their lives and create mastery in that. We cannot create mastery today, because if we will start creating mastery on things, those things will anyways become redundant so fast that we will be left behind. So having a continuous learning mindset is another important one.
I love it. I love it. I love it, Tariq. You know, what I'm hearing from you right off the bat is I love how you refer to AI as a coworker. And I've some of the customers we work with, have they even started identifying it? They're saying, hey, you know what? I have a team of 10. Now I have a team of 12. And they're referring, even naming sometimes the two the AI as like Bob or Mary or whatever it is, you know, to try to fit it in. The other thing that I really love, and I know we'll get to it, is the importance of the skill number five, which is continuous learning. I think I've seen somewhere that the half-life of a skill is down to about 4 months. So think about that. Somebody gets out of college in May, but by the time the next year starts, they need new skills. So they have to get they have to have learning agility and know how to evolve. But going back to skill number one, can you explain for me and the audience, what do you mean by digital mindset?
Yeah, absolutely, Damon. I would love to expand on that. And that's a question, I guess, one of the most should be in FAQs somewhere. Because we all talk about building a digital mindset, digital literacy, AI literacy, but where people struggle is around what is it that is needed, right? Does everyone need to know how to code? Does everyone need to know how to run, how to create an algorithm or interact with an algorithm at its very basic level? Let me put it simply for you, in a little bit more so simpler form. So digital mind, building a digital mindset, as I mentioned, organizations are now not just humans or not just machines or not just softwares, right? It's a complex interplay. So being digital mindset is basically effectively understanding how the output of these machines, algorithms, digital networks, and humans are going to solve a specific business problem or going to address a specific business need, right? How in future you create, capture, and deliver value through the interplay of these technologies and humans and leadership. This is what building a digital mindset is all about. It has nothing to do with coding, right? The first step is to build some digital literacy, of course, right? Yes, now the question sometimes comes that, okay, now do we need to know how to code? Still, the answer is still no, right? You still don't need to know how to code. So building digital literacy is all about, again, just understanding how the organization is utilizing these algorithms, how they are generating the data, how the data is flowing into the organization, how it is being categorized, stored, and then consumed for the insights generation. I would like to refer to a very great work done by two researchers, Siddal Nele and Paul Leonardi, around the 30% rule of digital literacy. It's a good thumb rule. So 30% rule of digital literacy is on the back of 30% rule of language learning. So if you are to learn any new language, right, you need to know around, if you want to create mastery of that language, right, you need to know around 10,000 words of vocabulary. But if you want to understand the language at its, in a conversational way, you just want to make sure that's similar to, so for example, English is not my first language. So if I want to converse in that in a reasonably confident way, all I need to know is around roughly 3,000 words. So that's the 30% of those 10,000 words. So digital literacy is also the similar thing. It is just about understanding how well you are able to collaborate with the machines and then use that output that machine is generating to solve your business problems, to again solve your, link it with your business needs. That is what digital literacy is all about. So in their words, for example, and I would really like to mention that, because I think it's very powerful, is around how do we collaborate with the machines, right? Communicate the insights generated by those machines, by those algorithms and technology, and then lead the change that comes in due to that technology. In order for us to able to understand these three aspects, right? What they call as collaboration, communication, and change. That's what digital mindset is all about. That's what digital literacy is all about.
Collaboration, communication, and change. So
yes. That's the work that credit goes to Siddal Nele and Paul Leonardi. So I want to make sure that the credit goes to them. Yep.
I like that. And sitting here as somebody who's a leader myself, and I think probably a lot of our listeners, and not a technical, super technical myself, how would you go about recommending people like me or non-technical people become more digitally literate? Because to me, back in the day, that digitally literate to me meant knowing how to use Excel or Power BI. But this is a big shift, a big change. So where does somebody like me start picking up those skills?
Great question, Damon. And that's what you might have noticed on LinkedIn. And probably that's the reason we also met at first place as well. Yep. I share a lot of content around that area, because I do believe what we need to do is to we need to start moving away from, yes, there are people who are creating a lot of create content, right? But we have an overload of content at the moment when we talk about, we want to learn about AI a little bit, or we want to learn about things like visual data visualizations or understand anything. What we need today is we need to start curating the content, right? And I have actually done that. I have led a project as well where we did the same. So where we need to start is start with a very basic understanding of things. So start curating the content, the relevant content for yourself, right? Create a list of those key big major courses. And right now we are living in a world where everything is available at our, literally at our fingertips, right? As in our smartphones. And many of the content out there is also free. So you don't really have to go for the paid content, right? So all you need to do is just to make sure that you are starting off with the very basic ones. So for example, AI, if you want to learn a little bit about AI, understand AI for everyone, or these kind of courses, which are like, you know, which touch very at a superficial level, different subjects. Once you understand at a superficial level that, okay, what are those different technologies can do? What are their capabilities? Because see, today it's very important to understand what AI, for instance, can and cannot do. There is so much noise out there, right?
So true.
To cut through that noise, as a business leader, you need to be able to understand what the true capabilities of AI are. If you will look at the content out there today, it feels like generative AI has already revolutionized the way we are doing the business. But that's so far from reality, right? I mean, business use cases of Gen AI are there, but they are not the only use cases. So AI is what business leaders probably need to understand, that AI is not just generative AI today, right? AI has been there for last many decades, but since 1960s, but then I would say in last 10 years, it has got some really good traction in the media and everywhere as well, and have got some really good use cases. And they are not just the generative AI ones. So we need to understand as business leaders that what are those capabilities that we can utilize of AI. So I'll give you an example. AI is being used in a lot of organizations today for transaction processing, right? We don't hear a lot of that in mainstream content these days, right? We only hear about generative AI, right?
ChatGPT.
Predictive ChatGPT, exactly. Or Llama 3.1, which was just introduced. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we are just too excited about you know, communicating with a machine and then, you know, asking it to create poems for us and whatnot.
I'm right. So, I'm right there. I have it create child bedtime stories for my kids.
Awesome. So great use case, but somehow still not relevant to business, I would say. No, things like predictive maintenance, right? Things like the real benefit, I do believe, of these technologies come in when we look at that interconnection of these technologies. How can we actually converge different technologies together? And that's what digital literacy is also all about. Leaders need to know, okay, what is AI about? What does Internet of Things can do? What can a digital foundation, data foundations can do? What can technologies like process mining that can do? So process mining again, or task mining, again, AI is being used for that in a very, very, very good way, in a very efficient way to improve business processes and everything. So high level understanding of all these major technologies and how they are shaping up the business and how they can actually link those to their business use cases is the first step towards starting off with your digital literacy journey.
So that's great. To go in the opposite direction, one of the top skills that you said that's super important in the future is EQ, emotional intelligence. Why is that?
Great question, Damon. And I would definitely love to expand on that one. Now, let's remember that organizations today are not just one workplace that we used to define in the past, right? So work, the very definition of workplace has changed, right? Today, my home is my workplace, right? Today, your office is the workplace. Of course, today, if you are a digital nomad, so you can work from anywhere in the world, pretty much, that is your workplace. So there is this element of, number one, remote working that is coming up, which is resulting in leaders not being able to have that face-to-face interaction or the benefits that we used to have from a face-to-face interaction, right? Where you can actually build empathy and understand those physical cues also. That is no longer there. You are only looking at the face of a person behind a camera, and you don't know how that your what you are saying or what you are talking is impacting that person, right? You might not be able to read it in a 100% accurate way. Now, this one, remote working is one element. Now, another dimension that comes into is around businesses have expanded so much into centralized business solutions. For example, today, businesses have outsourcing partners. They are interacting with gig workers. As I mentioned already, there is a geographical spread. And then there is an added complexity around cultural and generational dynamics as well. How do you manage Gen Zs? How do you manage millennials? How do you manage boomers, right? There's an additional complexity around that. And emotional intelligence is not just restricted to that, right? How do you actually understand the needs of people on a Zoom call, for instance, or people who are working remotely, right? You need to build that skill. And it's not, and what I wanted to say was that it's not just restricted to this. We know today that AI, for instance, and we is automating a lot of tasks, right? And there is an apprehension in people at large that it's going to take away jobs. And to an extent, which is true also, right? Some of the jobs are going to go away, right? Which will be automated. Now, being emotionally understanding that how you are able to communicate with your teams and with the people that are in your organization, at how these technologies, first of all, are creating a tech-enabled humanistic future and are not just there for the job slashing, right? It requires leaders to be cognizant of and aware of what are the needs of the people and what are the wider organizational emotions. So it's about understanding the emotions of the wider organization, people sitting on the Zoom. So if you are communicating to someone that we are implementing an AI solution which is going to automate 30% of your job, what emotions and what needs does it create in that other person? Now, that other person can be sitting in an entirely different part of the world over a Zoom call, right? It's not easy. I wouldn't say that I have unlocked anything, or anyone has, in for that matter, has unlocked the answer. But it's all about learning and making sure that you are aware that your actions and what you are saying and how you are utilizing technology today is creating a huge impact on people emotionally as well. It is very difficult today for leaders to be transparent and to be open in answering many questions and reservations.
Why is it more difficult today to be transparent and open than pre-AI, so to speak?
Yeah, so this is the biggest reason being, right now today, we see the business world, there are so many challenges out there, right? Technology being one challenge, right? We are being pushed for cost cutting. Organizations are being pushed to deliver productivity, inflation, macroeconomic conditions, geopolitical conditions. So what we are living in a VUCA world, right, which is volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. Now, that is why I say, I come back to that point again, that it is ever more important to be emotionally intelligent. It is very difficult, right? It has become very it has become difficult, but it is also has become very, very important today. All these complexities around various elements of what I'm trying to allude to is creating that space, creating that importance of being emotionally intelligent. I hope I'm making sense.
No, absolutely. I mean, what I hear you saying is emotional intelligence and really empathy, right? Because even as a leader, as you're talking about how, hey, you know, because people are listening to the news, they're watching the news, they're talking to their friends, and they know that AI is going to take away jobs, you know, and people are frustrated, or maybe frustrated, it's not the right word, anxious. And I think it's leaders' responsibility to be able to at least put themselves in their team members' shoes, right? To look at it from their perspective. And along with that comes the ability to be a good listener and being present to hearing people out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So all those leadership traits, all those skills come into play when we talk about emotional intelligence, right? So you need to be a good listener. You need to have empathy. You need to be able to build rapport with the team. And the reason I say it's difficult, your dynamics are very different. You're living in a world which is a remote worker, which is based on a remote environment today. So, and which is a VUCA world. So understanding the emotions and then responding back to people in a very controlled and delicate way requires a very careful consideration, right? So that's what I'm trying to refer to. That is why being emotionally intelligent, building that empathy is very important in this world where technology is taking over,
as well as technology, but also Gen Z. And I'm not, you know, putting down Gen Z at all. But I had a conversation today with somebody at lunch, and they said one of the great things about LearnIt, what you do is you teach these types of skills, because Gen Z, they've grown up with social media, and with social media, they don't, it's more of a challenge sometimes for them to learn how to interact and communicate. On the flip side, they also probably grow up with stronger technical skills. So there is definitely trade-offs on it. But let's talk to a little bit more about the skills, and then I want to talk about it from an adoption level. What else would you like to share about the skills?
Yeah, and I guess one point which you very, very aptly put around the Gen Z, that they are, yes, more technically savvy, and of course they have this different
approach to
way of
communication.
Thinking as well, yeah. Right? Approaching towards it. Yeah. So again, for organizations, what they need to do is, again, research has shown that every organization, so in a typical organization, there are three types of people, right? Digital natives, which are these Gen Z, highly tech savvy, and they know, they know what they're doing. They know Instagram, they know Twitch, what Twitch is and everything, right? Then there are digital immigrants, right? I put myself in that category, right? Who moved from, you know, from a world which was pretty analog, pretty manual, into a much more advanced and algorithm driven. And then there are digital ignorants, right? Which are not the ones who are very much digital savvy. But having said that, everyone has a very different skill set that they bring to the table. Digitally savvy people bring, of course, the technical skills. Digital ignorants, they bring a lot of leadership skills and change management skills, which are needed today, which are one of the most important ones needed today for digital transformations to succeed. Now, it's all about how do you create a learning ecosystem within the organization that can help you to leverage different strengths of different profiles.
Can you give us an example of how you could do that?
Yeah, of course. So one of the global cosmetics company, they actually implemented a reverse mentoring process, a reverse mentoring initiative, where the most junior tech savvy staff would mentor someone, would get partnered with someone in the executive team, and would mentor a senior most executive of the organization. Now imagine, and that actually helped them. They are one of the very good case studies around digital transformation as well. that helped them fast track their digital transformation. And imagine how much knowledge exchange would have happened between the two, right? How you are able to build and develop. And connection, of course, right? At the end of the day, I mean, careers, we talk about networking, we talk about building meaningful connections. And that is how you do that. That is how you build that environment. Another example is around, there is this crowdsourcing review platform, Yelp, right? So Yelp introduced what is called Yelp Bean. So anyone in the organization could set up time with anyone else in the organization, whether they know them or not, as a time block for learning and development.
I love that. That's a cool idea.
That's really cool, right? I mean, so, and yes, for that, both the persons who are actually sending out the invite and the person who is receiving the invoice should have that mindset that, yes, through these conversations, we are going to learn from each other. So let's make time for it. The biggest issue is that we don't have time today, right? We don't have time for us to develop today. So you need to, we need to build that culture also where we are able to set aside a time and acknowledge the fact that the time that we will spend with someone who is blocking my calendar is actually going to be worthwhile. So that requires a mindset, a continuous learning mindset at a very different level.
That's great. I love it. I love it, especially it's just critical. Like what I hear you saying is that if you want to have a successful digital adoption transformation, and we could talk about the flip side, the failures, but it's kind of like really requires having a learning culture and setting a time space, which I assume, well, not assume, I know it has to start at the leadership level. The leadership has to have buy-in.
Absolutely.
Has to have buy-in, because if they're not allowing their team space to connect with others and space to learn, it's going to cause a failure. And so speaking of, let's say, failures, what do you see from an organization perspective? Why are organizations struggling to adopt AI in their organizations?
So from an organizational perspective, let me share an example. So a couple of years ago, a global company, which was a technology company as well as in the power generation, they embarked on a project to centralize all of their digital transformation efforts, right? A separate digital unit was set up, right? The objective was very clear that it will look after the end-to-end enterprise-wide transformation, right? They wanted to take it to the very next level. The goal was very clear that they need to grab this digital prize, right? This sought-after digital prize. So naturally, and being a global organization, a whole lot of resources were put behind, from cutting-edge technologies to the best-in-class talent and everything. However, somehow, it was not working. There was one main problem with that. There was no return on investment. So unfortunately, after reportedly churning around $7 billion, that unit had to be shut down.
Wait, they spent $7 billion?
Yes. And it had to be shut down. Now, think of it, what we can learn from this one. First of all, digital transformation is not about having access to the best-in-class talent, funding, resources, or capital for that matter, right? You can burn a lot of money, but you can still fail in your initiatives. Secondly, that unit could not integrate into the wider business, right? So that is one of the challenges, again, from an organizational perspective, that causes a lot of digital transformation initiatives to fail is around organizations not being able to integrate their technology initiatives with the rest of the organization. People have, at a very natural level, people tend to always resort to their main objectives, right? They want to deliver profit, they want to push sales, they want to drive productivity and all those sort of things. Digital transformation becomes an IT thing, right? A separate thing. So if you have a separate unit, it becomes a separate unit thing. It's not for me, right? That's one of the biggest challenges. How do you integrate technology? How do you integrate the continuous improvement mindset, the continuous digital transformation within the wider business? Third one is around return. Many times I come across in my conversations with finance leaders and other business leaders as well is around how do we actually calculate the return on our investment, right? It's very hard. First of all, it's hard. Secondly, the return might not be there right away. So for instance, if you are investing in something like cybersecurity, right, or a data privacy, or even a data foundation, you wouldn't see any specific revenue growth or P&L growth right away. It won't come. You can't really link it to one is to one that, okay, because I put in this data lake or I could see that visual, I was able to increase my revenues by that much. It's very hard to calculate. So there might not be a return, a measurable return anyways. So what do we do then? Generally, what I refer to is that we need to have a more balanced scorecard view where we look at both financial measures and non-financial measures. That, for instance, if you have put in a cybersecurity initiative, one cybersecurity initiative, if my memory serves me correctly, costs around $4 million, right? One incident on an average, right?
So prevention.
So it's the prevention of that cost. How many cybersecurity hacks did you avoid, right, by just doing that? So it's about, again, you know, integrating, making it measurable. Governance is another issue, right? A lot of digital transformation failures actually happen because of the governance, right? In fact, a media corporation, and that was, again, quite a global media corporation, had to write off around $150 million worth of their assets. Basically, reason being, yeah, rough day. You wouldn't want that a lot. So reason being, they invested in a digital media initiative, which just could not work. And one of the biggest reasons was there was a lack of governance and supervision on it. So all these case studies, all these examples, they are real ones. They're big ones, right? I mean, they make news because they are big ones. There are so much smaller examples, and there are so many smaller cases as well. So if we really, really summarize it, I would say, first of all, is around your governance, then your integration of technologies, integration of your digital initiatives. Then it is all about your alignment of your visions, what you have from your business vision and strategy point of view versus your digital vision. That alignment is very important. That is one of the biggest challenges. Then measuring the returns on investment, making sure that we are not just looking at it from a dollar perspective. That's one of the challenges. And then overall cultural challenges. If you have a culture of continuous learning, do you have a culture of psychological safety, experimentation? All those elements pretty much comes down to that cultural part, which is one of the biggest, one of the major part in any digital transformation failure or success. In fact, a BCG study suggests that organizations, and I love to share statistics because at the end of the day, I have been in finance for a very long time. So organizations who have a better culture and a digital mindset are 5 times more likely to succeed with their digital initiatives. So this is what I would say if I summarize it at a very high level. I mean, I can talk about it for a whole day. I mean, there. So it's such a big subject.
Because when you and I spoke before, you said that 87% of digital transformations fail.
Yes.
And so that's a gigantic number. And you just said that there's a 5 times better chance of success for organizations that have a stronger learning culture.
Okay, not just learning culture. Learning culture will be part of that overall culture, right? It is all about having a better digital culture, right? And a digital mindset across the organization.
A stronger digital mindset.
A stronger digital mindset where every leader is seeing the digital vision as an alignment or as an enabler to the wider business vision.
And not just in the IT department.
Not just the IT department. Yeah.
The old mindset is, okay, digital. This just goes back. This is just an IT. And what you brought up much earlier is that it's the integration between the departments, that it affects sales, that it affects marketing. And it also, Trey, what I heard you say, which I think is really important, is having a new way to look at the return on investment. You know, maybe it's not necessarily going to increase sales and hit your quarterly goals, but think about the cybersecurity hacks or things that come up that it actually saves at $4 million a piece. So it's kind of like taking that digital mindset again and flipping it around and using it and looking at things from a different perspective. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, Damon. And when it comes to adoption around AI and all these different technologies, you also need to understand that this creates, as we mentioned earlier as well, we touched upon that, it creates some uneasiness within the organization also, right? So you need to measure that. What is your employee engagement scores, right? What is their adoption rates? In fact, in all likelihood, you are actually going to make people's lives better. And I truly believe that through technology, by removing all those, eliminating and automating all the tasks which they were spending time mindlessly, right? So if your org health scores, if your team engagement scores are going up, that is a big measure. That is a big, big win.
It's huge.
I would call it the biggest win, right? It's huge. If your people are upskilled, it's huge, right?
And I like, I'm preaching to the choir here, but what I like to, when I speak, because I'm always pushing AI adoption in my little organization, and I'm telling the team, look, we're not doing it to eliminate your job. What I'm trying to do, I even spoke about this in my book, what we're trying to do is free you up to work on higher level tasks, higher level projects, you know, get you into buy back a couple hours here or there, which really adds up so you can focus and learn and talk about, you know, ask better questions, get more involved, dive in, get more creative, be more innovative.
Absolutely, Damon. And the world has moved beyond, as we talked about earlier, beyond where we need to actually spend 10,000 hours in one skill in order to create mastery. We cannot strive for mastery. We as Adam Grant, I was reading his book the other day, The Hidden Potential, I guess. He mentioned that
Adam Grant. Great book.
Yeah. He said something on the lines that we cannot just go for perfection. We cannot strive for perfection. We cannot strive for mastery. We have to strive for excellence. Create a mindset where you are going for the excellence. Yes, you will. And throughout the careers, now today where we are, today the careers are not going to be just one role or one skill set that will just get you onto a production floor and you're just doing what you have been doing or you just keep on doing for next foreseeable future. That was part of the old industrial revolution. We have moved past beyond that now. It's skills are evolving every single day. What I learned about data science 4 years ago, today I go back and I have to, and that's where Damon, I would say the most important, if I am to put it like the most important skill we need today, just one, right? That will be having a continuous learning mindset. You need to be able.
You're preaching to the choir, pal. You have to have learning agility. You have to understand if you're a know-it-all and you got it all figured out, you're done. You're literally done. You're going to get passed up. You're going to be left behind. You're going to be left in the dust. So Tariq, in a previous conversation, you said one of the biggest struggles and challenges with AI adoption is because leaders are afraid there's going to be a shift in power. Can you share with me a little bit, what do you mean by that?
So Damon, in a way, we are a bit afraid of technology as well today, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, one thing is the job part, job slashing part that we look at, which is of course real concern. There's another apprehension that technology will result in democratization of information and maybe too much to our liking. What that means is anyone in the organization will have access to information. So person who is lower down in the organization and person who is higher up in the organization will have access to the same information at pretty much the same time as you are, as you have it. What this would mean is that as a leader, you might not be able to control that narrative that you want to run with. And that's don't take it like a negative thing, like as a narrative, because at the end of the day, you do want to understand and bring your perspective on what data is telling or what information is telling. The consequence, however, of that, which leaders fear, is that they will not have enough time or the ability to craft a story behind those numbers, because data might tell an entirely different story and in a much more faster way. So that is where I will refer back to, and that is why I say I mentioned earlier around building a data-driven focus. So leaders need to build a data-driven mindset, right? And to do that, acknowledging the fact that you don't know all the answers, and it's okay to not know the answers, right? In organizational settings, we always pride ourselves on being Mr. Know-it-all or being someone coming to you and talking about, and you want to give a decision right away. You want to make sure that, you know, people do not listen from you, that you people do not perceive you that you don't know. But that should be seen as an okay, right? I mean, that's part of being a data-driven focus. That's part of being a data-driven mindset, that yes, data is telling me I had an assumption. Right now, linking it again to the continuous learning also. These are all interrelated, right? I mean, they're connected. They're different thoughts, but they're connected thoughts. I had an assumption based on my knowledge of the situation. Data is telling me a different story. It's time for me to update my assumption. That is what data-driven focus is. That is what continuous learning is. That is the mindset which is needed to succeed in this and thrive in this world.
I think there's a great quote. Is it John Maynard Keynes who says, when the facts change, I change my mind. What do? Because it's true. You can't put a fork in the ground, stick with it, and just even if the facts and the data comes in and shows you're wrong, are you gonna own up to it and make that shift? Because if you don't, then you're going to go down the wrong path.
Absolutely. And that's what it's learning is all about, right? And please don't take me wrong when I say just trust data And I mean, by no means I'm saying that stop using your gut feel, stop using your inner compass, your intuition. That is what makes us humans, right? That is who we are, and we must use that. We must utilize that. That's the strength. That's the power. That's probably the only thing which is not going to get automated in foreseeable future, at least.
That's so true.
I hope so.
Yeah.
So yes, use your inner compass, use your gut feel, but do not over rely on it when data is telling you a different story. Be ready to understand that how that, again, now I will link it to that digital mindset. Understand how that data was actually generated or created at first place. Is it telling the right story? Is it telling it is giving the right information as well? Or was it processed in the right way even? For that, you need to, of course, build a digital mindset. That's where that digital mindset comes into play. So it's a very complex interplay. There is no single recipe that you can follow that you need to have 30% digital mindset, 20% data-driven mindset, 10% emotional intelligence. That's not, unfortunately, how it's going to work. These are all the skills that we are going to need to build and be open to build throughout our lives now.
I got one question that I was thinking about for a little bit before we wrap up here. We talked a lot about the skills that are needed for leaders. You know, leaders need this, leaders need to do that. Well, what if our listener out there isn't a leader? Do the skills change for them? Are there a different set of skills that they need, or is it the same set of skills? Even if they don't inspire ever to lead a team or anybody, is there a different set of skills for them for the future, or are they the same five we discussed earlier?
I do believe, and I truly believe, that everyone is a leader.
I'm with you on that too.
Right? It does not mean that you have to have a separate cubicle, or sorry, separate room, a corner office, to be called a leader. You are leading what you are doing. You are leading, but through your work, if you are creating an impact, if you are your work has some purpose to it, you are a leader. You are leader of your own domain. You are leader. I don't think so. I can find a person today who is totally cut off from the entire world, right? In one way or the other, you are interacting with people. You are interacting with your family. You are interacting with your coworkers. You are interacting with your vendors or and so on and so forth. You are interacting with people. You are always a leader. You can lead people into thinking into different mindsets and into, for instance, if you are say an individual contributor kind of a person, right? So let's talk very specifically from an organizational perspective. If a person is an individual contributor, does not want to become a leader, or like in a sense that as a people manager or something, you would still be leading a number of projects. You will still be leading a number of initiatives that will have impact on different parts of the organization. That is going to have an impact on real humans. Whenever that comes into the equation, you need to act as a leader. And to act as a leader, you need to have emotional intelligence. You need to have data-driven focus. You need to build a digital mindset. You always need to be aware of what are the ethical and responsible considerations for AI and technology. And you need to be a continuous learner. You do not need to have an office in the ivory tower to do that. You must do that in whatever capacity you are working today. Whether you are a solopreneur, you are an entrepreneur, or you are a CEO, or you are a manager.
I love it. And so, Tariq, you spend a lot of your time giving keynotes and doing talks. As we wrap up here, what is one of the most common questions that the audience asks you, maybe either after your presentation, around AI and a digital mindset?
Frequent one that I get is, where do we start? How do we start?
And what's the answer?
I want to learn. How do I start? And To be very honest, I cannot tell you a point A. That, okay, start from point A and you will reach a point B. Because there is no point A and there is no point B. It's a journey. Learning is a journey. And you might start off with one thing. Down the road, you will realize that's not the right direction I'm moving into. You then need to pivot. You need to be flexible. You need to be open enough to... That's what it comes down to. Challenge your very own assumptions. Having the skill to acknowledge that there are no skills or nothing in the world that you cannot learn. Or in other words, having a growth mindset is all that is needed. That's the starting point. If there is one. There is no ending point. You will never be able to end that journey. And I hope you don't. And I wish you don't think about even that, because there is no end to, never an end to a learning journey. It's like your brain cache, right? I mean, we talked about clearing the cache for browser. So we need to continuously to keep clearing our brain cache to create space for the new assumptions, to create space for the new knowledge to keep coming in. The starting point is the gap between your assumptions and what is the real knowledge out there. When you go and strive towards bridging that gap, that is your starting point. And that, for that, you might have to try 10 different things. And that should be okay. That's fine. I mean, you will fail while you will be learning. You will fall off, and then you will get up again, and then you will keep on learning. That's how it is. It's not, there is no formula. Yes, you can always go on for digital skills, for technical skills. You can always start off with some, as I mentioned earlier, high level courses, and just understand that whether this is your cup of tea or not. So I personally, for instance, have started working on a number of different things. So I started to even learn. I mean, at the very core, I started off as an accountant, right? So I did all my CA. I have started accountancy, and then I went to a typical career path where I have been working within finance and so on. But then I kept on updating my assumptions. I kept on clearing my brain cache and starting to learn new skills. I did a certification in data science. I even created an algorithm on anomaly detection. Then I realized that, okay, this is probably not my thing. Coding is not my thing. Okay, it's not something I have lost. I have learned something. I can now confidently talk to people when they talk about algorithms, when they talk about coding. So I have learned something. That is your starting point. You just need to start. I mean, no matter what, you just need to start, and down the road, you will realize that, okay, this is the skill I started to learn. It's not what is meant for me. Okay, I'll move on to something else. It will only make you wiser than yesterday. So it'll only make you better than what you were probably a month ago. It's a win. I think it's a big win.
It's a win. And Tariq, as we wrap up here again, it also, if you're out there exploring and you're trying different things, and there's a great book out there called Range by David Epstein. And it says, don't specialize, especially early on. Get out, try a bunch of different things, because you might find out what your strengths are. And even if you fail at something, like you mentioned with accounting, you know, or maybe you didn't fail with accounting, but you just realize that that's not something that you wanted to go down for the rest of your life, but you learn something from it, right? You learn something from it. And when you learn stuff, you can apply that throughout your life. So you shouldn't look at that as like wasted time or anything else.
Of course. I think accounting, for instance, or this has given me so much exposure to so many different things. I mean, I think I'm placed in a very good position within finance, for instance, where I could see a lot of different processes at a very high level. So, I mean, there's always things to learn. So don't stop learning. And anyways, it's Learn It All podcast. So learn it all.
Yeah, learn it all.
Just learn.
But I want to add something to that. And I learned this from a different guest, David Katz, who's amazing, founder of Plastic Bank. He said, learning without doing is treason. So learn, and try to apply what you do. You have to. Well, I'm going to try to recap kind of some of the things that we spoke about today, because we talked about so much. Number one is what the key skills are in the future, and let's see how I do on this. Digital mindset. You need to have continuous learning. The importance of being data driven, and also compliance, right? You need to understand what the compliance is. Did I miss any there? Did I get them all?
By compliance, I mean the responsible AI practices, the ethical AI practices, and then continuous learning.
I had to have you say continuous learning. I think you'd also want to add adaptability in there at some point too, you know, because I think adaptability is super important. I loved what you talked about, examples of organizations that have had a successful digital transformation. You know, 87% of organizations fail. We talked about some of the reasons why they do, why they are successful. I really, really liked your idea about reverse mentorship and how that helps connect the organizations, and also digital transformation and reframing the ROI sometimes can have make a big difference. And then what else we talked about? We talked about a lot. And then really the importance of having a learning culture and learning agility, because your skills are always going to be changing and everything else. Before we wrap up, do you have one last tip you want to share with the audience?
Again, Damon, if there is one takeaway or one lesson that has helped me, that I would like everyone who is listening to take on and do, is build a growth mindset. Never stop learning your learning journey. Be open to acknowledge and understand that yes, your assumptions can be wrong and it's okay. Always be ready to update your assumptions. Always be ready to strive for new skills, to strive for learning something new. Because in this world, remember, all the manual tasks, all the repetitive tasks, or anything that can be redesigned in the form of an algorithm will be done by our coworkers, by our artificially intelligent coworkers, right? What do we bring to the table, right? We are not just competing with humans now. We're competing with, in a way, technology also. What is our competitive edge? So our competitive edge is our contextualization, our consciousness, our ability to connect the dots in a way technology cannot. And you can only do that if you have a continuous learning, a growth mindset. That is what I would say, that if there is just one thing that you want to do, please do that.
Tariq, I might have to just take one of these sound bites and use them for the about section of our show, because I'm so on in there with you on the learning and everything. So Tariq, how can our audience find you? Where can they connect with you at?
Oh, LinkedIn is the best platform. I am very active on LinkedIn. I share a lot of educational content out there, and then I do share my opinions and my point of views, and I'm always open to new information as well, to update my thinking as well. So please, that's the best way to reach out. Otherwise, you can also reach out to me on my website, which is tariqmunir.me. But I guess LinkedIn is generally the most accessible one and easiest one. So yeah, just go on and give me a follow or send me a connection request, and yeah, we can go from there.
So I'll put them both in the show notes. I think you have like 50,000 plus connections on LinkedIn, which is
somewhere around, which is awesome.
Amazing. Well, you've been awesome. So thank you for joining our show today. And for our audience out there, if you enjoyed, got value out of this, please like, subscribe, and share. Tell a friend about our podcast. Thank you so much. And until next time, stay curious and keep learning. Have a great day, everyone.